A More Beautiful Life is a listener-supported show. You can learn more about the benefits you receive from your support, such as access to other courses, special access to tools, blogs, and skills through our Patreon channel, patreon.com/amorebeautifullife. Hello, you are listening to A More Beautiful Life podcast, recognizing, appreciating, and integrating earliest life experiences. My name is Kate White, and I created this podcast because of my passion for my work as a therapist and an educator in preventing and resolving earliest trauma. I believe that integrating our earliest experiences brings us closer to who we really are. On the show, I will be having discussions with others on the path who have explored healing our earliest experiences in life, or who, in my opinion, have found ways to live a more beautiful life. Today on the show, we have Dr. Marty Glenn. Marty is the co-founder and clinical director of the Risio Institute, offering professional trainings and intensive retreats to help adults transform their lives. An award-winning and pioneering psychotherapist and educator, Marty is founding president of the Santa Barbara Graduate Institute. SBGI is known for its graduate degrees in prenatal and perinatal psychology, somatic psychology, and clinical psychology. In her clinical work and trainings, Marty emphasizes the integration of the latest research in a number of fields, including epigenetics, polyvagal theory, neuroscience, attachment, pre- and perinatal psychology, mindfulness, and trauma. She has produced a number of conferences relating to prenatal and birth issues, and she co-produced the broadcast quality documentary Trauma, Brain, and Relationship, Helping Children Heal with Dan Siegel and Bruce Perry. She has appeared in such documentary films as What Babies Want, What Babies Know, Reducing Infant Mortality, and Improving the Health of Babies. She is a recipient of the Verney Lifetime Achievement Award in Prenatal and Perinatal Psychology and Health. Marty is a frequent speaker at conferences worldwide. She lives in Santa Barbara, California, and enjoys working with her husband, Ken, in their Risio programs, retreats, and leadership trainings. Outside of work, her greatest passion is being with her grandchildren. Marty is a special friend, mentor, colleague. She's been very dear to me, and she also is quite a lot of fun. Please enjoy. And today I'm here with my really dear friend and mentor and colleague, Marty Glenn. It's such an honor to have you here, Marty, and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Kate. It's such a treat for me to get to be with you. We've collaborated on many fun things, and the only thing would make it better if you were in my kitchen right now. We could have a hug.
Yeah, I know. I've been in that kitchen, and we've raided your fridge. It's always good food in your fridge and your freezer.
Right? That's right.
Yeah. So this is a treat to spend this time with you. And what I would love for listeners to get a little bit more about our paradigm. Like, you and I have this really big shared passion of the pre and perinatal period and the baby's experience. And we've known each other a long time. So I'm wondering if we could go like way back. Like, you and I have had this discussion before. Like, I know, tell people how you sort of found yourself in this experience of the pre and perinatal world.
Well, many decades ago, many moons ago, probably in the 80s, even as early as the late 70s, I was training therapists and had a practice, and I was always working in the body. I was working with more body-oriented gestalt therapy, and also what's called Ericksonian hypnotherapy, meaning person would go into a very deeply relaxed state, and we would say, take us back to the source of this difficulty. And in this very deep state, over and over and over again, this would happen. People would go back to a time in utero or a time around birth, something that happened. And I didn't know what that was. I had no idea what it was. But when we began to work with whatever that experience was, whether it was a traumatic birth or being adopted or hospitalized or mom leaving or whatever it was, then lo and behold, they began to thrive and things would get better and working with children and so on. So I thought, wow, I have discovered something. This is fantastic. Nobody's doing this thing, this pre-birth thing. And then, of course, I discovered there were a whole bunch of people that had already discovered this, which is wonderful to have some colleagues. Thomas Verney, David Chamberlain had formed this, what's now the Association of Pre and Perinatal APA, right?
Yeah, Psychology and Health.
Yeah, Psychology and Health. Thank you. And I began to work with some of these people. William Emerson had been doing, he was the first person to actually do psychotherapy with babies.
Right.
And would take them back and talk to them. And I was fascinated. And some of the methods that were used back then, we don't use anymore, but it was a time of big feelings and all of that. And it's kind of like we kind of needed to go through that, I think. We don't do that anymore. But I became very involved with APA and ran a lot of conferences and continued to look at, because my own early history is pretty graphic and pretty dysfunctional and very abusive. And there, I have six siblings. And of the six of us, I would have to say three of us made it, you know. And I always wonder why. And I became really fascinated with resiliency. What is it about, you know, one person in the same family with at least some of the same genetic heritage, one person thrives and the rest of them don't thrive so well. And so Ken and I, my husband, started, we started doing intensive retreats. We learned that working with somebody intensively over a period of time gave us better results than I could do in a 50-minute hour once a week. And we understand now why that is. And then in the late 90s, we decided there was no place you could study pre and perinatal psychology as a graduate student. And there was certainly no place you could get a master's or a doctoral degree in it. So we said, hey, let's start a college. I had been the first academic dean at Pacifica Graduate Institute. So I thought, yeah, we did it. So we did. We started a college and had we ran it for 10, 11 years. And really, it's been wonderful being still being in touch with our graduates and so on. So not only did we have APA, there was the European Association, and we had Santa Barbara Graduate Institute.
Right.
And that has promoted a lot of that. And then, of course, after that, you started the APA education program, which right now is one of the few total programs out there. You have a program, thank goodness, and there's some in other places. This is a thing. This is happening. Very important that we go back and look at what happened to us. In fact, the question is for children, particularly for anybody, is not what's the matter with you? It's what happened to you.
And how you made sense of it
yes.
also. That's, well, let's go back a little in your narrative. You said intensives worked, but not once a week. So can you, or less. So say why intensives work. I'm curious.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Gosh, where do you start with that? With an intensive, we have an opportunity to settle in, to go deeply, to help the person feel safe, which hopefully they do in a once a week. But what science has told us is that in order to really shift the neural networks, we haven't really gotten into the brain stuff yet, but our experience creates what I like to, Dan Siegel does this kind of thing, creates neural nets. And those neural nets are created from that experience. And when we have a different experience, an experience of feeling safe, an experience of, wow, I am safe, I am lovable, I am whatever, you know, whatever our, I'm smart, I'm capable, you know, and we have an experience and it's witnessed by someone who cares. Mm-hmm. Now, we can do all of that in a 50-minute hour. Mm-hmm. What we can't do quite so well is the researchers tell us that within 5 hours, that experience, we have to repeat that experience. Not that we have to have the same experience, but I have to stay with, oh, right, I'm capable, I'm lovable, whatever that experience was. Or for a lot of us, I'm safe. I've never really experienced feeling emotionally safe, mm-hmm. right? And so we have to repeat that experience. Mm-hmm. And we also know that it takes 62 days to grow new neurons in the brain. So if we have a habit or a new way of being, we have to continue that. Now, we don't do intensives for 62 days, you know, but what we do is we help people have experiences at a retreat. And then we stay in touch with them. So they in that 7 days, let's say, they have a number of times to experience this mm-hmm. feeling. Wow, how I show up and who I am are okay. Mm-hmm. I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can shine. I can be all of myself or whatever that experience is. Mm-hmm. And they have that several times. And then they go home. And we always say it's Tuesday. It must be Risio. So we do our Tuesday night Zoom calls. So they're with their group again. And when I see my buddies on the screen, that also brings my experience back.
Right.
And I work with my coach every week. And that also, you know, continues the growing. And so we continue for 10 weeks. And then after that, the groups continue. So they create, we all need community. We all need a tribe. We need to have these experiences ongoingly. Mm-hmm. So as a therapist, I can see somebody once a week and help them to cope. And maybe we can over time make some changes. Mm-hmm. But when we do something in an intensive way with the follow-up, we're able to actually shift their experience of feeling safe in the world and their experience of who I am and, mm-hmm. and how I show up is okay mm-hmm. and brilliant and move on mm-hmm. to their desires and their goals and transform their lives. So you can tell I get very excited about this because I see right. it over, well, and over and over and over again.
Well, not everyone's going to know Risio. So maybe tell people what you do. And then I still want to go back into your narrative a little bit, but tell people okay. like what you're okay. doing. What is Risio?
Okay. Well, Risio actually, it means we're rising together. And it's an organization that my husband Ken and I formed a few years ago, which you know about. Mm-hmm. And we have three different types of programs. We have a 3-hour program where we do like a workshop and people kind of dive in, sometimes for organizations or businesses or just a group. We have a 3-day, which we do in a number of different places. That's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday retreat. And people can have that, you know, kind of experience. And then what we call the 3-month program that I just described, mm-hmm. where you take a deep dive right into yourself. You walk in to an experience of love. Mm-hmm. And you feel safe, and you feel safe to go into that. So mm-hmm. those are the programs we have, mm-hmm. and we have a large staff, and we have our coaches. And so our coaches work individually with people during that time. So we have mm-hmm. small group, large group, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So,
uh-huh. Right. So I'll put in our class, on our podcast notes, all about how to read more about Risio and how to find you and Ken and all your staff there. But I'd like to go back just to emphasize just a few things.
Okay.
First thing, you did you did a training with William Emerson. You did his, what was he doing at that time? Like a foundation training or a...
Yes, I don't even know what we called it then, but it was training in working with adults and helping them go through the process of their birth and healing whatever that was. And we've kind of grown from that process, but what he was doing was phenomenal. And
yeah,
I learned to work with babies and young families and children and apply some of those principles.
And yeah, when was that with William? The 80s.
1980s. Yeah.
And then you continued on with Ray Castellino.
I did Ray Castellino's training program in the 90s. The 90s, I think.
Yeah.
And began bringing all of that into intensives. We did, I had groups that we would do. People would, you know, sign up for a year and we would do a 3-day intensive once a month, which was a wonderful way to do that. I also helped to start an inpatient treatment center for teens up in Big Bear, which is up in the mountains of Southern California. And we worked with families, and the families came on the weekends. And so we did these large group processes with families that was so powerful. And so you can see coming down the time, just always looking at what creates resilience. And with the teens and their families, when we went back and worked on the things that happened to them early in their birth process, they got better. They went home.
So why do you think that was so? Like, this is what I want people to get in the crux of sort of the pre-perinatal work. Like, they're now just starting to accept that babies have experiences. Right. And we know from reading the science, which I love, like you love, we love reading all that, that if a baby is well received and is cared for in the first 2 years of life, really attuned to and secure attachment is established, a lot of the challenges from pre-perinatal time can be healed or integrated in such a way that we're even more resilient.
That's right.
So what can, like, helping people, help break it down just a little bit, Marty, like, how can people understand their earliest experiences? A, how do they know they have them? How can they find help for them? And so these days, like, how can we help people, both families and adults? Big question.
It's a very exciting one that I love to work with. And just to back up to emphasize what you just said is that what happens to us from probably before conception through the first year of life sets the template out of which we live our lives. Literally, it is the foundation of how our nervous system develops, how our brain is wired, our mental model. So whatever happens to us early on, we begin to create ideas about who I am and how I have to be in the world. I'll give you a quick example.
Good.
In the work that I've done. My mother's sister died in childbirth. She and her baby died just before she got pregnant with me. So you can imagine how anxious she was during the pregnancy and a lot of grief and all of that. And with some work that I've done, actually with Ray Castellino many years ago, I realized that I had this experience. This little tiny voice came out and said, "My mommy's really scared. And I don't know how to take care of her." So unconsciously, in that moment, I decided two things. One is, if I can't take care of my mom, I must not be very smart. Now, how I came up with that, but I lived it my whole life. I just pretended I wasn't very smart until I worked through it and decided,
you're pretty smart.
Well, if you think you're not smart, what do? You go get a PhD, right? But those early unconscious decisions that happen through nobody's fault, no one's fault, when we go back and look at that and go, "Oh, wow, that little tiny being decided that she wasn't smart." And I also decided that my job, and this was reinforced a lot in the crazy step family that I was in, is that I have to take care of other people. That's my job. And I'm very good at it. And I can't have needs of my own. But as we go back and work with some of that, and it's not about, oh, this horrible thing happened to me. It's not that at all. It's not even about reliving it. It's about understanding it and going, oh. I'll give you another quick example, if I could. When we were at the place where we were working with teenagers, I was working with a girl and her family, and she was at the inpatient treatment center because she was cutting on herself. And of course, everybody was labeling her. We know you have this big diagnosis, and da da da. And I'm, let's look at this. And so I asked her, she was sitting between her parents, and I asked her mom, what's her birth like? And her mom said, it was wonderful. I planned when she was going to be born, and we had a C-section. And then she begins to describe the cutting on her belly. And her daughter screamed and fell on the floor.
Wow.
I know. And as her mother bent down and held her and said, I am so sorry. I didn't know. This was really scary for you. And that was what was needed. And dad held mom. Mom held the daughter. And they stayed there. And they all cried for a while. And then they were able to come back and have some eye contact. And she was able to realize that a part of her was trying to express something that she didn't unconsciously express something she didn't know how to express. And so it's not about what happened. It's about getting it and understanding it. And having someone there who can go, wow, at that point in time, that was really scary for you.
Right.
And they took you away and you didn't even know where your mommy was. And that was so, so scary.
Right.
And then they can come through that, feel heard and seen and safe and loved.
Yeah.
Pretty remarkable.
And then that early experience can get integrated and then it stops needing to feel like they have to express it or tell the story.
Right.
Good stories.
And that
okay. So yeah, just for listeners to know, like if you're new to Preperinatal, just to understand there are decades of work here with our pioneers like Marty and the whole development of the Santa Barbara Graduate Institute with BJ Lyman and Wendy M. McCarty and others. A whole host of people used to teach there and it was just a vibrant place. I remember always like BJ and I would get on the phone. I'd be like, oh, I really want to come. And there was a lot of people that really wanted to come and waiting to see you guys get more accredited or I forget the whole process, but yeah. I know you and Ken have told me why and how you had to sell the school, that it couldn't thrive without more, you know, more money or more bureaucrat.
It's a different era. We live in a different era now.
That's true.
And there's so many ways now to get the education we want and to heal and grow. And the biggest takeaway, I think, from all of this is it's never too late to have a happy childhood.
No, you're
really
right.
Isn't. And all we have to do is get some support. First of all, we have to feel safe.
Yeah.
We have to yet have some experiences of who I really am on the inside and have that witnessed by a caring other. All the sciences are saying that now. And it's very exciting what's possible and what we can do. And it's very, very, very doable. And I'm so thrilled that we have more and more people that are willing to support families and to look earlier and earlier, and even to help adults before they have children to work on their own early birth. I won't say birth trauma, birth history. We all have something. There's always more love. And on the other side of all of this healing is more love, more presence, more of the goodies I get to feel every day.
Yeah. Well, then you can access your gifts and you can really have more energy for that. Like, you're not bogged down in some kind of autoimmune disorder or energy depletion or some affliction that can come from that can come from adverse experiences that they've documented. Mm-hmm. And they haven't quite got to the place of documenting all the things that can happen with birth and early trauma, prenatal trauma. But we do know about transgenerational, intergenerational work now. Yeah. So, and that's where, the art of therapy now, it's we know that it's in the implicit somatic aspect of our work really needs to be included and accessed. So I'm wondering, Marty, if you could describe ways that you do the access to our, so that, what is the blend of if you could wave a magic wand, what would be your ideal in terms of all the experiences and skills and things that a person needs to heal our earliest experiences in life if they've been traumatic?
Well, I'm thinking of two things. One is for a practitioner who's working with people. And by the way, we all have to do our own work. Right. I never stop doing mine. There's always more.
Yeah, me neither.
Mm-hmm. The other side of more work is more love, more connection, more creation. So there's that piece. And then there's what people can do in their own lives. And we need a witness. All the research is saying the three things that we need, as I was saying a moment ago, we need three things in order to heal and be resilient. Mm-hmm. Okay. The first one is experiences of safety. Mm-hmm. The second is having an experience of who I really am on the inside. Mm-hmm. And the third one, having that witnessed by a caring other. And sometimes this involves journaling or doing art or being creative and allowing whatever's inside to come out. Mm-hmm. And having that witnessed. Mm-hmm. And that can be done in any number of ways. There are also some very simple practices that people can do when they feel like they're not in charge or they're about to leave what John and Anna Chitty call the window of presence, which right. I love to use. If I'm leaving my window, there's some very, very interesting, I'd love to just show you a 10-second this is out of the Heart Math Institute.
Right.
Call it ABC, aware, breathe, connect. So I'm aware that I'm going a little off or I need a break or whatever. And B is breathe. Put your hands squarely on your sternum, on your heart. Aware, breathe, and then a long exhale. So that aware, breathe, and then C can stand for 100 different C's, different things. Connect. I like to say connect with what's true. Right now, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm okay. So ABC. Mm-hmm. And we even have children go, Mama, ABC, time for ABC. Or telling each other, excuse me, wait a minute, I'm just going to take a pause here. Mm-hmm. And you can do that in the middle of a boardroom, in the middle of a classroom. You can just pause.
Middle of a podcast.
Yes, right? Just ABC, right? And so just slowing down, mm-hmm. lowering the tone of our voice, mm-hmm. having some eye contact, mm-hmm. puts us in the place to use what Stephen Porges calls our social engagement system. Mm-hmm. That's our first go-to. And we want to stay there as much as possible. It's why we need the other. Mm-hmm. Attachment researchers talk about that as well. We need to have the caring other witness us. I mean, you watch a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 40-year-old. We all want to be seen. Right. But a little kid will say, Mommy, watch me. Daddy, see what I'm doing? We want to be seen. Right. We want to know. I want to know I'm okay. I want to know that you get me. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what happened, these are all things that can help grow our resiliency. Finding ways to have eye contact that feels safe. Mm-hmm. Because we know that eye contact elicits the love hormone, brings in the oxytocin. And if it's not safe for me to have eye contact, which is not for a lot of people,
right,
with people that I care about, I kind of back up, then have eye contact. We can't do this much now because we're all isolated, but when we can again, have eye contact with people on the street or somebody that holds the door open for you.
Yeah.
Or I have a practice that I do with when a clerk hands me a receipt, I hold on to the receipt until they look in my eyes, if it's appropriate. And they smile and I smile. We both have this oxytocin rush and we go about our day.
Yeah. It does make a difference. I've been running these online groups for mothers and practitioners, and I send them out into breakout groups so they can talk to each other. And then they come back and their faces are all different. They're all smiley, and the social engagement system really is necessary for health and well-being in our species. You know? So I see that. Yes.
And I think that right now we are being called to something different. This is the first time on the planet everybody has to stay at home. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're rethinking, who am I? Mm-hmm. What's needed right now? How can I serve? Mm-hmm. How can I help? And I think that we're going to see some very different ways of being and different ways of looking at things than we've ever seen before. It's going to come from this presencing and this being with myself first, and then being with you and serving others. It's a very exciting time to be doing what we're doing. I'm thrilled. I'm just thrilled with what you're doing, Kate. You're passing on, and with every life that you touch, just like everybody listening, every life that we touch, you know, we may touch 10 others, which touches 10 others. So the effect that we're having ultimately is very exciting and huge.
Right. Well, you're the second person I have interviewed that's talked about this. Well, the third one actually that's talked about this period of time as a big opportunity for our humanity. And so I'm pleased to hear the echo and the emphasis and the repeat of that in talking with you today. So if you could just project, let's just project into the future, just we're beyond this horrible or wonderful or whatever you want, this crucible that we're in, this, and if you could see, like, you know, we in pre-perinatal therapies have struggled over the last 4 decades to be appreciated and to be recognized. And I feel like we're at that time where we're being appreciated and recognized and integrated into therapy and medicine and science. So what will be the therapy of the future? What will be the prevention of the future? Just because you have been our pioneer, our award-winning practitioner, educator, I would like to give you the microphone to speak to people now. Like, where do you think we're going? What needs to happen next?
Well, I see the connection that we need, and that needs to start from conception or before. Connecting with our babies before they're born. Really having all the things we know now about skin to skin, having conscious birth, really just knowing everything I do, how I feel, what's happening has an effect. And that's not to make us super hyper, but just to go, wow, this is an important time. And to speak directly to the baby, to create good relationships with our partners, to actually slow down. And it may be a time, hopefully, that we can get off our devices at least for a period of time. And that when a mom is nursing a baby, she's right there with the baby and not texting and not on her phone, right? And that as the children grow, that we can be even more attentive to their internal, their psychological needs, knowing they cannot regulate their nervous system by themselves. And we regulate our nervous systems better when we regulate with each other. And so the future really has to be more appropriate contact. And by appropriate, I mean, you know, we're not there like this all the time, but we're, there's a dance that we're doing back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's this reciprocal. I'm noticing you. Mm-hmm. I'm noticing what you're needing. Mm-hmm. I'm backing off. I'm reading your cues. You know, Kate needs some space now, or I'm coming forward. Hey, what about this? Mm-hmm. You know, that we're sensitive to each other and that we support the tribes, the families, the groups, professional organizations really support each other to heal, do their own work, and so that we can all become more resilient. There's a lot that's possible now. And it's all about love. We don't really talk about love, but it's all about love.
Yeah, the unconditional high regard and the concept of mutual support and cooperation, that we're all here on the planet together, and
yes,
we're want to take responsibility for the development of our humankind. And this is what I'm seeing in the science now, the brain development, the fetal brain, the fetal medicine, they are getting it that we need to support our moms. And the last place I'm seeing it really be embraced is in the actual birth room. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're also realizing with the advent of the mother-baby, you know, dyad care and the skin-to-skin right after birth and the sacred hour, that things are shifting slowly. And soon we'll be able to make repairs with our babies right away so they don't have to be teenagers and cutting before we get what happened.
Right.
And those are I'm training practitioners and you're supporting adults, and right. And I would love to see prevention and healing, but you know, right at the birth site, to yes. help our families make sense of their experiences and go right. on to thrive as opposed to be a little wonky. And since the very beginning, because as you know, people will carry their birth experiences all their lives.
Yeah. I see it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I bet.
And when we go back, as we do at RISIO, and investigate, experience, you know, explore that in a very safe environment, wow, a lot of things open up.
Right.
So much is possible.
Right. So if you could, it sounds like we're getting to the end of our podcast, but if you could just say what helps you your life be more beautiful, Marty, what would you say?
The thing that helps my life be more beautiful is being with you, being with friends, being with family, people that are meaningful. Every day I get to work with my best friend. We work together 24/7. That is so, it's just so, so amazing. And being grateful. I have incredible children and grandchildren now. Mm-hmm. And it's the connection.
Right.
All the wonderful connections that we get to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Marty. Well, to be continued, I want to say, well, let's come back and talk another time.
I love it. I love it. Thank you. Thank you. All right. You do.
Thanks. You've been listening to A More Beautiful Life podcast. To support our show, please go to Patreon/A More Beautiful Life.